Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal!
A division of Bell Media.
Sports Radio 1290 presents the summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game.
Just a quick shot. Score! Just like that!
Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
As much as I want to do the classic Drew opening, good morning, Winnipeg, or good evening, excuse me, I'm not going to do that. Filling in for Drew Mandel in the host chair, I'm Richard Pollock, joined in studio by, as always, Ezra Ginsberg.
Richie, what's up?
And Michael Remus, who is always in studio or across the room, is in studio today taking my seat. Michael?
Hey now, feels good.
How was back from Lollapalooza?
Good to have you back, Reem. I got to say, we missed you. You were only gone for, what, 4 or 5 days, but it felt like 2 weeks.
It felt like a long time, and I want to say, you know, as much of fun I was having there, I was really, you know, missing the show, and I listened to it, and I felt like I really missed out on a part of Illegal Curve history.
Yeah, I listened to that show twice. As he made me laugh, this last segment of last week's show, which is available on iTunes, was one of the funniest segments I've ever heard. You were amazing, Ezzy.
Yeah, last week was a really fun show. We had Steaks in, and that was lots of fun. It's funny, it seems like, you know, every week one of us is in the U.S. Richie was in Minneapolis a few weeks ago, Remus was in Chicago, and, you know, we just got a text from Drew, email from Drew, saying hello from Lexington, Kentucky. Drew's in Kentucky.
Drew who?
And he said, have a good show, guys. Kill it. So.
Yes, yeah, so, and by the way, Tim Debenham.
Hello.
Behind, there we go. Timmy's going to get a little mic time today. You know, there's now, Drew's not here, so there's a lot more mic time for all of us.
Oh, everybody's mic time goes up like 75%, Richie.
Exactly. Okay, guests today, we're pretty pumped up. You know, we're mid-August, still tons of stuff to talk about, and we are going to delve into every single hockey issue that you can probably think of tonight. We have four guests. First guest is going to be Kyle Kozier, who's going to join us in a couple minutes. Kyle is the Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. You can read his work on illegalcurve.com. He has extensive experience at the junior hockey level, working very closely with the president of the United States Hockey League for an extended period of time. In the second segment, we have Wade Davidson on from the Believe in the Goal Foundation. Tonight is the Believe in the Goal Foundation hockey game, the Summer Star Super... What's it?
Superstar Summer Showdown.
There we go. Superstar Summer Showdown, which is...
Four S's right there.
That's a tongue twister. Say that three times fast.
Yeah, no kidding. But that's the game that is actually the final game this year for charity. It is the reason for the game is Wade and his family have started this foundation in memory of his brother Todd, and this is going to be this is I believe the sixth year of the game, and we are going to have Wade on. The game is on tonight. Michael, Ezzy, and I all have our tickets. I think there's a small amount of tickets available, or have they sold out now?
I think that there's tickets available only at the MTS Iceplex.
Okay, and the game's at the MTS Iceplex tonight at 7 o'clock.
There's about, you know, Richie, you know, for those who haven't been to the MTS Iceplex, I believe all of us here have. I'm not sure, Timmy, but I've been there once. But I believe that the largest arena seats about 15 to 1,800.
Yes.
So it's probably going to be pretty packed.
Well, this will be my third year going in a row. I truly enjoy it. There's a bunch of NHL players going, Winnipeggers, Manitobans, Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
It's for a great cause. It's for children with cancer, and it's a $30 ticket fee, and it goes towards a charity of a great cause. So I would encourage everybody who doesn't have tickets, I believe there's only under 100 left at this point. I would encourage everybody who's at home, you know, take the $30 that you might have spent on dinner out somewhere, go to the game, enjoy it, and you get to see a bunch of the guys you're going to be seeing at the MTS Center come October 9th.
Yeah, and Richie, Wade's going to join us in, 10 minutes or so?
Yep.
And this is the third year in a row that we've had him on. I was looking last year, we actually had him on the exact same date.
Really?
You know, for those who listen to us on Kick, he joined us back on Kick twice, and he's always been really good to us, and like you said, we've gone to the games the last few years. And, you know, Richards is going to be there, Taves is going to be there, Meech, Tutu, I believe Eric Fair will be there, he won't be playing,
shoulder injury.
Cam Barker, and on and on and on and on, Colton Orr. So you should get down there if you have a chance to go to the MTS Iceplex, you know, snap up the last couple of tickets left. And there's going to be a social there after as well. So
there was a golf game yesterday.
Yeah, a golf game. So it's like, you know, and it is the last year, but it's really in an event.
Last year of the hockey game.
Yep.
Not the golf, I believe.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Wade about
that. We're going to ask Wade.
And yeah, it will be the last hockey game, but probably not the last year of events.
We also have two more guests tonight. We have Jimmy Fox from the Los Angeles Kings, former 30-goal scorer. Currently, their color commentator has been for a long period of time with his sidekick, play-by-play man Bob Miller. Jimmy Fox is going to join us. He's been on the show a number of times. I don't know if there's anybody who knows the Kings as well as Jimmy Fox does. And let me say this. The LA Kings, not only, as I mentioned on Hustler and Lawless' show yesterday, not only are they maybe a dark horse Stanley Cup contender, yep. And you've always been on that, but they've had a very interesting offseason in acquiring Mike Richards, trading Ryan Smith, of course, and the fact that Drew Doughty is not yet signed. That is very significant, because you could argue that he is the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. If you gave an executive the chance to pick any defenseman in the league right now, you'd probably hear some say Weber. The others would probably say Doughty.
When you factor in his age,
yeah.
His versatility, his skill level, what he's accomplished at a young age, he's already a gold medalist. Is he at the Olympics?
He was the best defenseman at the Olympics.
Hold on, yeah. Well, for a second there, I was like, hold on, he's only 21 years old.
Yeah. Amazing, yeah.
That was
amazing.
Only, a brief time ago, but you're right. And Jim Fox has always been a good guest. I love him, one of the best color guys in the business. And there's lots to talk about. Who would have thought that, Mike Richards would have been the biggest Richards, changing teams this summer? Everyone was looking at Brad Richards, and obviously that was a big free agent signing by the Rangers. But that Mike Richards trade shortly before the draft really shook things up, didn't it?
Sure did. And we have our fourth guest tonight, and our final guest tonight will be at 7:30. It'll be James Gordon, returning guest, of course, from the Ottawa Citizen. James does a great job there on the paper as well as his own blog. And let me say this. Alexei Kovalev sure made things interesting a couple days ago with his comments about writers like James Gordon and their ability to smuggle beer across the through security at the airport. So we'll be asking James what beer he prefers to smuggle over the border, as well as many other things that's happened in the Ottawa offseason. It's been a fairly quiet offseason in Ottawa. I think they're hoping for a bounce back. But they quietly acquired Nikita Filatov at the draft, and that could be something interesting. He actually made news this week, and we'll ask James about that at 7:30. But without further ado, I believe we have Kyle Kozier on the line. Let's get the Legal Curve Hockey Show hotline going.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're joined live on the hotline by Kyle Kozier, Legal Curve scouting correspondent based out of Grand Forks, North Dakota. Kyle, how are you tonight?
Hey, Bill. How's it going, guys?
Great. What's going on, Kyle? That's Ezzy.
Not much. Hey. Yeah, it's going well. I just got peed on by my little fellow there, so I'm
right now. Kyle is a first-time father, which is terrific. Ezzy is actually a third-time father. Doesn't know any of the children, but we'll talk about that another day. Kyle, this week, Jake Marto was signed by the Winnipeg Jets from the University of North Dakota. We don't know much about him at all. You know far more about him than we do. Can you give us a little bit of insight into who the Jets have signed and what he brings to the table?
Yeah, Marto is, as I'm sure you're aware, is a Grand Forks native. He played at Central High School here. He's been a standout all the way through, and then had a sort of a brief stopover in the USHL before he came to the Sioux here. Having lived in Grand Forks for a while now, anytime people see a Grand Forks kid on the roster, they're obviously excited to see him on there, but of course there are also people that are like, they're just trying to get some local flavor and that kind of thing. But Marto has really been a good player for them for 4 years. He's a defenseman, sort of bases his game around skating and puck movement. He's not a great big kid. I should say he's tall, about 6'1", but he's slightly built, but he's like an offensive puck moving guy, to the point where they play him on forward, actually, or have played him on forward quite a bit the last couple of years, and he really doesn't look out of place. So I think it's a good signing for the Jets, and as we know, and I think some of you guys realize as well that the Moose formerly had a lot of staff here. You'd see at least something from the team here most weekends when the Sioux are in town. So they've seen him a lot over the last 4 years, and obviously like what they saw, and it seems like he might be slated for the ECHL, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the American League team. And more of a let's see what we have type of signing type of thing. I don't necessarily know that a fast track to the NHL or something, but he could be one of those AHL dreamers that eventually finds his way to the league too.
Yeah, is there a ceiling? If you had to classify him, would he be maybe a 5-6 defenseman ceiling in the National Hockey League?
I think so, yeah. As a guy that's followed the Oilers for a long time, they sort of recently signed a lot of those guys to play in Oklahoma City there. The Alan Rourke type that, kind of bounce around the minors and finally get the shot at, 20-29 type of thing. That's what it is with their time. And I think that'd be the ceiling again. Depending, if he can develop his offensive game, he could also be sort of the bottom of the roster play or power play type specialist like a Bergeron, but I don't really, he doesn't really have that type of shot. He's more of a passer first, but all the same, he can run a power play quite well and doesn't have a place with the high end prospects that the Sioux have come through town.
All right, Kyle. Earlier this summer, the Jets signed UND product Jason Gregoire. What can you tell our listeners about him?
Well, that's a guy that, you know, and I've written about him on the site before, too, and I'm really very excited about him. He's a guy that, left winger, obviously, but he plays a really, I think the pun they made is Gregoire plays a gregarious type of game, but he does. he goes up and down his wing, he hits everything, he finishes his checks, he's very tenacious on the forecheck. Very, very self-aware defensively as well. But, you know, the big thing with him is that if he has an opportunity to shoot the puck, he does that quite well. He has a good shot. It's quite, it's very, very, gets it off quickly. It's accurate. And he doesn't need a lot of space to get it off either. So, at college level, especially in the WCHA, that guys, you don't put up big numbers. You know what I mean? It's a fairly limited regular season. A lot of games are very, very close checking. It's a more of a defensive style of game. And he's still putting up, you know, double-digit figures on goal. So I would not be surprised to see him find a place on the Jets roster as soon as this year, just because he's, wow, he's a, you know, he's old, you know, 22, 23, a guy that could step in, and I think he's obviously has a few years on some of the younger prospects. But I think the type of player they lack on that roster, either anywhere from like a third-line energy role to right up to, you know, maybe playing on a second line if he can find his offensive game at the professional level too.
Kyle, we've already talked about Mardo and Gregoire, two guys from UND who were signed by the Jets,
yeah.
And you mentioned that the Moose had some staff in Grand Forks. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about the relationship that True North and UND have?
I think it's the relationship at this point, as far as I understand, is very, so certainly very cordial, nothing official there, but as you know, you know, Mark Chipman's a UND law grad, so, and there's some other conduit there, too. You know, Brad Berry is a head coach both at UND and with the Moose. And I think there's just a lot of, you know, I guess I want to say mutual respect there. I think the Moose staff recognize that, you know, the Sioux coach staff and program is pretty good at putting out professional players. You know, not even at the NHL, but a lot of those guys go on to have pretty good careers at the American League level and whatnot. So, and because it's so close to proximity is such that they're just like having Brandon a couple of hours down the road for one of these kids. I mean, if you got all these high-level college prospects coming to town, and I think in this day and age, you really have to be proactive in looking at college free agents, you know, to fill up maybe the bottom of the roster there, because, you know, you can sign these guys pretty cheaply, you know, for minimum $500,000, $600,000, and because of the age I mentioned before, you know, 22, 23 years old, they can step in, you can play them on the third or fourth line. It's not really going to hurt them developmentally. So I think if they can get that relationship going and have a presence in them, not only to watch the Sioux, but other teams that come through town, I think it's really going to be a big deal for the Jets going forward. So I wouldn't be surprised to see other kids end up, you know, signing with the Jets or into the system at the very least.
Kyle, we're up against it. We're going to get you on next week to talk about Jason Hasdorf, the possible role that he may have on whatever team he plays on this year, and we're going to discuss
sure.
further some other prospects. So we appreciate your time, and we'll speak to you next week.
Right.
Sounds good. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks,
Kyle. That's Kyle Kozier, Legal Curve scouting correspondent. You can find his work on LegalCurve.com. He does the prospect pulse, and he does a bunch of other things. The guy knows the game as well as anyone, especially the prospect angle. He's my go-to guy. I think he's everybody's go-to guy. We're going to go to break. We got Wade Davison on the other side. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live, Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show
on Sports Radio 1290.
Some nice audio we have there of the Legal Curve hockey fans, Remus. Good work.
Yeah, that, I have to say that was Ezra who played a part in that as well. Two friends of ours. They wanted to help out.
Friends of ours? No. You can't say that they're friends of ours. People we met who were fans of the show.
Big fans. Yeah, that was an awesome. We're you know, this summer the hockey talk has quieted down a little bit, but we've walked around and talked to a lot of people. Now that the Jets are back, we're finding out that people want the puck to drop now.
Yeah,
I mean, people are excited for hockey right now.
To that point, the puck is going to drop tonight, 7 o'clock at the MTS Iceplex, and we have Wade Davis on the line. Let's get the Hockey Show Hotline going.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Wade Davidson from the Believe in the Goal Foundation is his third appearance on our show, as we mentioned earlier, and we're excited to have him on again for the game tonight, again at 7 o'clock. Wade, happy to have you on. What can we expect tonight from the Superstar Summer event?
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. You can just expect a great atmosphere with a lot of talent and a lot of excitement, just about a lot of great NHL players and junior players and all kinds of best players in Manitoba, basically, putting on their talent to display and showing the Manitoba fans just what they're going to get this fall coming up.
Wait, this is the sixth Superstar Summer Showdown. Why was the decision made to make this the last one?
Well, you know what? It's been a big commitment from a lot of different people. We've had a committee that's worked together many meetings, you know, monthly, weekly, over the years. And the players, you know, it's a commitment for them to make sure they're in town at this time. And they've put in many years for us. They've you know, had a great attitude throughout the whole thing and dedicated a lot of time and energy towards it. But we thought, you know, with the Jets coming back and many years under our belt, we just figured, let's go out in a bang and make it count and just say that we made a difference when we could and, you know, put on some really good entertainment for the excited fans.
So this being the last hockey game and having had it for 6 years, what's your favorite memory of the Superstar Summer Showdown over that time?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is back when Todd was still alive in 2006, when he got the whole thing started. He was center ice at the Selkirk Arena there, just humbly reading off the, thank yous to sponsors, and, he took no credit for what he did, but he just stood center ice and gave a little speech, and the place was just electric, and that first game was quite something. So I would have to say that's been my favorite memory, but I think even last year, just starting to highlight the skills competition, the guys like Cole Wilson put on a nice little show, mm-hmm. and there's just been so many entertaining moments over the games and over the years.
Yeah, that first moment you mentioned is obviously very inspiring. Wade, you guys have raised a lot of money over the years. I don't know the exact number, and we should ask you, because it's been a ton of money, and that obviously would have been raised if not for the effort of a bunch of people who were volunteering their time and towards such a cause.
No, it's been the effort of the committee, but it's also been thanks to the generosity of all the fans that have supported us. In the years the foundation's been operating, they've raised well over $300,000. Which is dedicated more towards the comfort of the cancer patients, more to adolescents. But they don't like things. There's a blanket program where they'll go just casually give out blankets and T-shirts with NHL players and visit the kids in the hospital. There's one of our biggest packages, I guess, would be considered an NHL experience, where teens that are dealing with cancer can apply and will choose one kid and send them away to wherever they want and wherever the league operates. And they'll get usually a couple games. They'll get picked up, basically treated like royalty for a few days, get to experience hockey firsthand and meet a bunch of the pros and just forget about what they're going through at that moment. And one of the biggest things that just recently was completed or is in the process of being completed this week is it's basically like a comfort room at Children's Hospital in a CK5 ward. It's called the Believe in the Goal Room, where there's just basically. The tools that let the person dealing with cancer kind of be a normal teenager for a while. We have a laptop, big screen TV, state-of-the-art beds for their comfort, and a lot of chairs for their family to be able to sleep over and just, kind of relax in a more contained, private setting instead of dealing with the mass treatment that usually go on.
Wade, you're obviously talking about some of the other initiatives that the Believe in the Goal Foundation undertakes, aside from the actual charity hockey game. Moving forward, what are some of the goals of the foundation? I guess as a second part to that question, what are some other events and fundraisers that we can expect from Believe in the Goal?
Well, the plan is at the moment is to definitely have the golf tournament every year. We had it yesterday at Bell Acres. It was a great day. A ton of fun, raised a lot of good money, and so the golf tournament's going to be in place, and I'm sure, once or twice a year there's another little gathering, get-together, but really just to keep the spirit and be able to keep sending the kids away for the NHL experiences and keep doing, the little we can to just, help take away some of the pain and suffering of the people that are going through it.
That's a great way. Are there any more tickets available tonight, or are you guys sold out?
I heard there was about 100 left at the door, but that was about half an hour ago, so I'm assuming they're pretty close to getting sold right out. But anyone that wants to take your chances. Might get, just get lucky.
And that's at the MTS Iceplex tonight at 7 o'clock, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Wade Davison of the Believe in the Goal Foundation, thank you very much for your time. We know it's a very busy day for you. A great cause. Congratulations on the job you guys have done over the years with this hockey game, and good luck in the future moving forward with this initiative.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Wade Davison, Believe in the Goal Foundation. We're going to take an early break here, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about things that are certainly inconsequential compared to what we just spoke about. A great cause, guys. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, we're going to be there tonight.
We're all going.
Yeah.
And it's a great experience. It's a great atmosphere. And most of all, it's a great cause. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I've Ezra Ginsberg to my left, as Drew would say, and now Michael Remus has moved from my left to my right.
Richie, I thought we were going to co-host.
Yeah, no.
Take it over.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job, by the way.
Well, thank you.
You're sharply dressed.
You've jinxed the show. The next hour and a half is right off.
Yeah. Cancel the show.
All right, guys, so...
Oh, your mic on, Reem?
I don't know.
Am I on here?
There we go.
Now I'm on. So, guys, the NHL...
Oh, is Remus hosting?
Okay. I'm going to take over in the host chair. So the NHL is doing their annual research and development camp. We had a lot of fun with last year. We went over each of the different rules, and you guys debated. Mostly did not like any of them, I think. But I think this year, some of the rules, you know, are plausible and could, you know, have an impact or could potentially be in a game. You know, a lot of these rules are, you know, the product of them is to create more offense. So let's just go through them one by one. You guys can, you know, talk about them. That's what you guys do here.
You're stat boy.
I'm sure, stat
I'll be
boy.
Cornizer, as he can be Wilbon.
Wilbon.
I want to be Cornizer.
Wilbon.
It can be Wilbon. All right. So the first rule, changes only permitted on the fly. So this would eliminate all line changes after whistles, except for the end of the period.
I mean, it's a ridiculous rule. Anybody who's played organized hockey or any form of hockey, at any point in time in their life, all this does is what they want to do is they want to create, you know, they want to prevent lining a bit, although what would happen is you'd have guys take faceoffs and change right away. But what they want to do is they want to make guys really, really tired. And then they want to create goals from players being tired. My problem with it is this. You might create more goals, artificially speaking, but what you're going to do is you're going to have terrible quality of play on the ice half the time because these players will be dog tired from playing 2-minute shifts.
I think, well, we're going to go through, there's how many rules, 8, and then there's some other rules, but I'm going to go through and check or X these off. This one's getting an X for sure.
Yeah.
You know what, the problem with this one is line matching is good. I like line matching.
I agree.
Who watches the NHL playoffs and doesn't think about who is going to stop Sidney Crosby? Who's
right.
Mike Babcock going to throw out? Obviously, you're going to throw out Lidstrom, but... The thing with line matching is there's counter line matching. That's part of line matching. It's not just one coach matching up line. Then the other coach reacts and says, "Okay, you're gonna take this right shooting defenseman, physical guy up against my power play guys." So as far as I'm concerned, this is trying to decrease line matching or eliminate line matching, which I think is a huge strategical part of the game. So this gets a huge X for me.
You think of Wayne Gretzky against Guy Carboneau getting matched up in the 93 Stanley Cup Finals. You think of Wayne Gretzky against Steve Kasper in the 80s. You think of Jaromir Jagr against the Habs in the late 90s, early 90s, when the Habs are employing 3 defensemen. Matchups. It makes it interesting. You know what I want to know, though? I want to know what Drew thinks of that rule.
Totally in favor of that one.
Drew, I don't know. I think we all think that it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, Drew. I mean, Drew's more articulate than he is in the studio.
Yeah.
Next one.
So the next rule is going to be no line change for a team committing an offside. So similar to the current icing rule, if you go offside, you know, whether it's by accident or even if it's a close call, you can't change your line.
Hey, I hate this rule. Because, first of all, you got rid of the automatic offside if you throw the puck in the zone. You're allowed to touch up now. Offside... To me, the offside penalties are generally as when you have a rush coming down the ice with speed and one guy's a little bit ahead of the play.
Yeah.
Or you're trying to create offense and there, unfortunately, a guy is an inch offside and then there's a whistle. I think doing this would slow down the game.
Yeah.
You'd have guys holding up at the line. They wouldn't have speed to pursue on the defense wide. And you'd have trouble creating offense eventually. Again, stupid rule. Let me go on a quick tangent here. NHL's got to chill on trying to change every rule every 5 minutes.
You know what the thing that strikes me about this rule is, this isn't something that was brought up either in the media or whatever this year at all. So I don't know why this is something that's on the plate. Maybe it's because this is research and they're trying to put things on the table. But I'd have to agree with you. The amount of offsides are not as high as the amount of icings.
No.
I mean, it's a little bit, it's not an exact science, but I don't think that, I mean, you're going to penalize teams for going offside when most of the time, like you said, you know, it's the guy isn't deep in the zone. So to me, this is a little bit
generally as
ideological.
When there's an icing, generally speaking, it's an intentional play.
Yeah.
On offside, it's almost never an intentional play. And if it is, they throw it back in the other zone anyways. Right? They automatically, you know, if they believe that you're pursuing, and if you've heard the whistle we play, you know.
It would be fun, though.
It would be kind of fun if we did that.
Good point, Drew.
But, you know, the one thing about these rules, they're just, the NHL guys, they're just throwing them out there, you know, just as a possibility to see, you know, what would happen, you know, to maybe, I don't think any of these are going to be, you know, in a game ever, but
you know what they should
test
do?
It out.
They should do. They should put this time into concussions.
Well, the one thing that's also kind of interesting about this is I feel like hockey is doing this, experimenting with new rules. I don't see baseball, you know, making the bases longer or changing the mounds or anything.
Because the game works, and there's trends throughout the game, and there's times where there's a lot of runs, and there's times when there's no runs. And that's just the way the game is. There's ebbs and flows for the seasons. And I just don't understand why, you know, it's hard to compare the NHL. They say pre-lockout and post-lockout. It's as if it was two different games. Somewhat it is, for sure, with the lack of clutching and grabbing. But as a hockey fan, I want to think of, you know, of the change in style not being imposed by the league itself, but by the coaches who come into play. You know, you had the 80s with the Oilers, you had the 90s, you know, kind of synonymous with Jacques Lemaire, but the coaches and players can dictate that, not the rule changes.
Remus made a good point, though, as far as hockey, you know, bringing up or entertaining the idea of changing rules more so than other professional sports. The only problem is a lot of the ideas that they've actually, you know, that have been bad.
Yeah,
we'll get to some of those. But as far as the defensemen, forwards shooting the puck out of the zone, delay of game, I think is still brutal. And the trapezoid is another rule they're thinking taking out. But
stupid rule. And then they move the net out. Remember to have a huge amount of space behind the net. Because all the offense is
no skate in the crease.
No skate in the crease. I mean, there's so many moronic rules that they've put in place here. I don't want to have them experiment anymore because their precedent they've set in the past has indicated that they're not capable of doing so.
Well, there you go.
So the next one we're going to... Now, this rule is kind of similar to the icing rule. So on an offside...
Junk.
Or no, sorry, not the icing rule, the penalty rule. So on an offside, the ensuing face-off would go into the team's defensive end.
Do you know how many times players would just stop at the blue line? Because you know how coaches coach to not lose instead of win. Players will play to not get scored on, not score. You're inhibiting speed... You're inhibiting the chance for speed, and these ideas are so stupid.
Richie, you'd be once again, like you said, slowing down the game, and you'd be increasing stoppages that goes with it. You shouldn't be penalizing, players and teams for going offside. It's not something that's usually deliberate. Once again, so this obviously the first three are all getting X's for me.
All right, so... Sorry, guys, I got to stop saying all right. Richard pointed it out
to
me.
No more all rights, Remus.
No, I don't get in the studio that much.
Yet,
but, I'm giving it a go. I'm no Drew Mandel.
You're doing a great job.
You know Drew Mandel.
There's only one Drew Mandel here. And then we're going on to the next rule. I think this is something in the game that majority of fans want to see be changed, a variation on overtime. Currently, we have 5 minutes of 4-on-4 and then the shootout. But they're looking at something along the lines of 4 minutes of 4-on-4 followed by 3 minutes of 3-on-3. You know, I think they tried this in the BCHL, and most of the games ended with a goal. I mean, you got three guys on the ice, they're probably going to score.
Yeah, I mean, they're so gimmicky already. I actually do hate this rule.
Yeah.
I don't love it. I think it's too gimmicky. I think the shootout's gimmicky itself. The league should get rid of the shootout, but they've brought it into play. If this is a way to get rid of the shootout, 3-on-3, it's gimmicky, but not as gimmicky as the shootout, so I'm okay with it.
Okay, I'm not okay with the 3-on-3, but I am okay with some type of overtime variation. I agree with you, Richie. I don't like the shootout. I wouldn't care if they took the shootout out. I like the 4-on-4 for 10 minutes as opposed to 5 minutes.
And then a tie?
And then a tie.
I'm fine with that, too.
That's a little bit of a more passive variation, but... I think that variation I would be okay with. 3-on-3, I think that's a little bit ridiculous to go 5-on-5 to 3-on-3, in my opinion.
And that one is something they really should adopt.
No, Drew would definitely agree.
Yeah, good point, Drew.
Good point, Drew.
Again, Drew, I mean, if Drew was here, he'd be saying inane things. With him in Kentucky, he's really saying a lot of, he's very eloquent.
Anywho.
You skipped the rule, Remus, by the way.
Oh, I did?
Number four.
Yeah. Number four? I just did number four. Oh, no, I didn't do it. Okay, number four. No icing permitted while shorthanded.
It's okay. It's okay that you skipped that because this will be a quick one. That's ridiculous, in my opinion. No. X.
Well, all that would happen is you just have the guys icing it 10 times a game, and they just blow the whistle icing, and they bring it back, and they'd have a face-off, and they'd blow the whistle icing, and you ruin the flow of the power play.
Yeah. Right? You know, I'm going to take the counterpoint on this one. I think that they should try this rule. I mean, you're on a, you know, you're killing a penalty. Why should the rules suddenly change that you are icing it? I don't understand how that one started.
Yeah, I don't think it's the stupidest idea.
No.
I just think that what will happen is what coaches and players adjust, Remus, and what they'll do is they'll just ice the puck continually. And then the game will get a lot more stoppages, and they'll be slower. And again, coaches are creative. And it's like the CBA with the GMs. They're going to find the holes in it. They're going to adjust. So think about the consequences of the rule and what could come from that before implementing the rule. Number six.
You know, guys, I'm not really keeping track. How are we doing for time here?
Yeah, we're good. Time.
Yeah. All right. Hey, first time in the host chair.
Another all right. Yeah, you got to pay into the bucket for another all right.
Yeah, I probably should tip into the swear jar after that one or the all right jar. So, next rule, all penalties to be served in their entirety. So, they're all going to be the same as a five-minute major.
Now, Remus, actually, this was the original rule in hockey. What happened was the Habs power play was so good in the, I think, mid-50s that they changed the rule because the Habs were scoring 3 to 4 goals on a power play. So they changed it to whenever the goal was scored, the power play was over. So this will kind of be going back to the roots. I don't necessarily mind this, but again, the consequences of this. If they call as many penalties as they are now, every game will be on the power play or penalty kill. There'll be no 5-on-5 and there'll be no flow. So while in theory it may sound okay, in practice I don't think it works.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I'm going to tend towards giving this one a no just because of the other factors that are involved. Such as, let's say a team loses a couple guys during the game, a couple guys get injured, and then all of a sudden you're going to play out the entire penalties with a team that's already shorthanded. It's much of a disadvantage, and with a team with a good power play, I mean, we're never going to be back to the heyday of the Montreal Canadiens where there's that much of a disadvantage. Right. But I think this rule is a little bit too involved for me, and it would probably give one team too much of an advantage.
What's Drew think?
Oh,
Drew doesn't think.
Sorry, one sec. Drew, I think Drew's busy chewing on a corned beef sandwich. What are you eating there, Drew?
Smoked beef.
It would be fun, though.
So Drew thinks, you know, it would be pretty fun that rule.
It would be fun. I want to quickly, Remus, you got the next two I see coming up here. Why don't you combine these? Because I have to be honest, this is not the on-ice play, and I like both of these rules. Why don't you combine them, and then we'll chat out.
I like these rules, too. I think there's something that's easy to implement. It doesn't hurt the flow of the game
Absolutely. At
all, and they're great. So the first one would be a verification line, puck length distance behind the goal line. So if the puck touches this line, you can clearly see that it's a goal because there's no way that it's going to be touching the red line if it's touching this yellow verification line. And that would be combined with, or, you know, in addition to, a camera on the crossbar that
I've
is pointed
that for years.
At the goal line.
Yeah, I've said that for years. Put it in the top of the crossbar. I mean, why not?
I think these two rules, 7 and 8, these are no-brainers.
They are no-brainers. What's taking so long?
Totally in favor of that one.
Totally. And the verification line, the thing with that is, I haven't looked too much into it, but I'm sure there might be some type of sensor or something like that, right, included with this.
Well, back the Fox puck?
No, I mean, as far as the verification line goes, but anything that's going to make the hockey operations department job easier. We've had Chris King on the show before, and they've had to make so many tough decisions, and you know, they've gotten decisions wrong, but it's because they didn't have the right camera or whatever. But I think that these two, anything that's going to make their job easier and more effective, efficient, they should do.
You know what's most disconcerting about all of these rules is that the ones that really preach safety haven't really been, you know, seriously considered. We talk about those main 8 ones, and you see later on, this is a Globe and Mail story, I think it was a Myrtle story, I don't know who it was. They talked about the other new rules in the agenda, Remus, and we're going to get to some of them. But my issue is this. Icing's been a serious injury risk for a lot of time. Kyle's been on this show before. Kyle Kozier joined us in the first segment, and he's written about it on illegalcurve.com because he had experience with the United States Hockey League, who employs the hybrid icing rule. Hybrid icing rule, it's an icing sometimes, it's not other times. With a touch, it depends on who's around and how dangerous it is. Or the no-touch icing. You don't see either of those in the main consideration, under main consideration here. And that's disconcerting to me. Is safety really an issue? Like Don Cherry says it. Do you need somebody to get killed or break their back or their neck going back on a puck to touch it for icing? We all play hockey. We play no-touch icing hockey. Do we care?
No.
I'd actually, as a defenseman, I would much rather have no touch.
It's in international hockey. You watch the World Junior Championships. I mean, it's everywhere. So yeah. That's something that I think, along with a more serious visor policy, again, there's still a huge debate in the NHL. There's a lot of guys in the NHL that still, with Stevie Yzerman and Colin White and on and on, Brian Berard, there's still guys and young guys that, because of the hockey warrior mentality, don't want to wear visors. And I think it's the same thing. How many more people have to, you know, lose an eye before it's mandated by the NHL, right?
And that's what I wonder about. I mean, these rules, as much as they're quirky, they don't take into account safety. And we talk about safety, and we've dedicated much time to the show, for a long time, talking about safety. So I wonder why they're not being more proactive in that regard. But I guess, you know, it's NHL, and we wonder quite a bit. And we can be happy that we have a team here, and we can be happy with the NHL for a grace period until October 9th.
Yeah, do we have any right to debate these rules, or should we just be happy to be here?
Yeah, are we in grace period time? Well, the 15 years of not having hockey makes us allowed, allows us to criticize them.
Well, we're soon going to be debating Ron Hainsey's slap shot on a stride-by-stride basis once the season starts. We're going to be picking apart every single player's game, so... The research and development camp is a neat idea, just like the hockey summit was for Team Canada, and it was successful. It got Hockey Canada back on the same page. But unfortunately, we're all huge hockey fans here. Unfortunately, the safety issue is just slowly, slowly not being addressed. And this past season was almost the worst, because it seemed like every single night on TSN, you saw a different hit to the head, and Rule 48 was... you could argue wasn't that effective in doing anything.
Yeah, and we're going to break right now. But my biggest problem is this. As you just talked about the injuries, the league's reactionary, not proactive. Yep. You're reacting to injuries instead of preventing them to begin with. That's the serious issue that I have. We're going to go to break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about more rule changes and a bunch of other little scuttlebutt from around the National Hockey League, whether it be Daniel Carcillo's comments about Matt LaPierre, Winnipeg Jet, Tanner Glass, or current Phoenix Coyote Rafi Torres. We have lots to talk about. We hope you'll tune in. We'll be right back after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290. We know that Drew's trying to sabotage the show by not being here, so...
Should the Jets not come out to this song? Isn't this a great song
that's
for
actually
the Jets
a really
to come
good,
out to?
That's a really good one.
Remember when we brought that up 5 or 6 weeks ago?
That's good. That's
such a pump-up song, the Beastie Boys.
Aren't they coming out to an army song?
Ants Go Marching?
Alien Ant Farm?
Darth Vader's theme? Isn't that an army? I'm not a big Star Wars guy.
What about in the army song?
I can't think of it. Seven Nation Army?
Seven Nation Army. It's not bad. Anyhow, joined in studio by Michael Remus and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Tim. I'm Richard Pollock, filling in for Drew Mandel and the host tonight. He is off in Kentucky with his fiance, planning his upcoming wedding in April, and I'm lucky to have been afforded the opportunity to fill in his more than capable shoes. And we are going to move over. We just talked about rules, and we talked about rule changes, proposed rule changes, and we could talk about that a little more later if we so choose, but... there's been a little bit of news this week. Now, surprisingly, it's the middle of August. It's August 11th today. And leave it to former Flyer and Coyote, Daniel Carcillo, to stir some stuff up this week at his introductory press conference. Him and Andrew Burnett had an introductory press conference. How Daniel Carcillo gets an introductory press conference is beyond me, but he got one, and he took that opportunity to call out Maxime LaPierre.
No, not LaPierre. He didn't call him LaPierre.
He called out Maxime LaPierre, but he called him...
LaPerrier.
Which made it even better.
Yeah.
And then he called out Tanner Glass, doesn't even play on the team anymore. He plays on the Jets. And Rafi Torres, who plays in Phoenix. So Carcillo probably hasn't been watching the signings this offseason, aside from his own. What do you guys make of this? Because, I got to be honest, I think he's just a nutcase. But he looks like a nutcase, and he plays like a nutcase. But what do you guys think of this?
Daniel Carcillo it has to be, if not the most hated player in the NHL, top three hated NHL players. Sean Avery's pretty hated.
Yep.
I don't know if we'll ever see him back in the NHL after he's having off issues. We'll probably see him.
Come on, Ezzy.
We'll probably see him again. But, you know, as far as his comments go, I mean, I actually kind of like it. I mean, I like when guys in the speak their mind, and not just speak their mind, but actually will go on the record and call guys out. Carcillo's obviously going to fight these guys. If he backs down, then he's always going to be remembered by the guy who backed down from Maxime Lapierre.
Let me get in there. I think he will fight those guys. But you're talking about, I mean, aside from Torres, who's built like a brick house, aside from him, I mean, the other two guys aren't exactly the biggest guys in the world. It's not like Carcillo's calling out, you know, Donald Brashear in his prime or anything like that. So I think he's picking and choosing who he wants to fight.
Oh, yeah. He definitely probably wrote these guys down on a piece of paper and had this scripted. But
assuming he's able to write.
I don't know if he can read. But as far as entertainment value goes in early August, I think it's great. I actually like Carcillo. He is a nutcase. But I like his game. It's not really centered around offense, but it's centered around agitating. And you know, as far as his role in Chicago, once you get into the playoffs, that's exactly the type of guy that you want against Vancouver and LA.
Do you?
It fits in with Chicago style. If you remember a lot of you know, Chicago Vancouver matchup in 2009 centered around how Chicago had young guys that were getting on the case of Sedins, whether it was Dave Boland or whatever. Yeah. But I mean,
fair point.
Richie, the thing is, Carcillo will take a lot of stupid penalties.
Yeah, and that's the
and
point.
He will hopefully reduce those penalties as he gets older. But I mean, he's basically putting a target on his back to certain guys.
He's crazy.
And everyone. He's nuts.
He's crazy.
You know, we don't really see this too much in hockey with guys with, you know, exuberant personality saying stuff like media. We don't have any Ocho Cincos or Terrell Owens. And, you know, normally we kind of scoff at this and be like, oh, this guy's an idiot. But I know he's stirring stuff up, giving us something to talk about in a slow summer.
The media loves him.
But when you talk about Carcillo as an agitator, he's kind of, you know, toned himself a bit down since he came into the league. In 2007-08, he had 324 penalty minutes, and it's gone down every year since to 254, 207, and last year he had 127 minutes. So he's
going to win the league pretty soon.
What are his games played like there, though? Are they consistent?
His games played 57, 74, 76, and 57. So okay. I guess as a penalty minutes, you know, per game, still gone down from about five to about a bit over two.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, so you're right, Remus. He is cutting down. And playing on a line with Mike Richards a fair amount after being moved from Phoenix forward Scotty Upshaw, part of the Scotty Upshaw wasn't part of Dry Island, being the what was referenced to as the non-drinkers on the Flyers, and they proposed that Carter and Richards become non-drinkers, and of course, apparently they didn't, they weren't willing to cooperate. Whatever. I mean, if you look at the play on the ice, I don't think you could have many qualms with those two guys. I want to segue over to Randy Carlisle's re-signing in Anaheim. He's been a coach there for, it's been a while now. And he's
7 years?
I think it's about that. Yeah. Obviously, Moose coach before that. He's done a capable job with that team. He's had some really, really, really stellar teams. Obviously, won a Stanley Cup. A couple of years ago, he took the Ducks to Game 7 against the Red Wings in the second round. This team generally doesn't underachieve. Randy Carlisle is known as a player's coach. Aside from his teams being undisciplined, I think his teams play extremely hard for him, and he seems to be liked by the players. I want to get your guys' thoughts on this re-signing.
Well, last year, people forget that the Ducks actually finished fourth in the Western Conference, right? At the beginning of the year, he speaking of targets on their back, Carlisle was a guy that had a target on his back for possibly being one of the first coaches to be fired. And I remember we were, you know, very vividly we were talking about that, and I tended to agree. There were rumors that he might go to Toronto.
Well, as we said, if he got fired, Burke was going to pick him up in a second.
Yep. And, because of their relationship back in the Cup years. Randy Carlisle is a great coach, great defenseman, and a couple of the local writers here in Winnipeg and elsewhere have touched on the fact that Randy Carlisle was an assistant coach in Winnipeg, I believe the second last year or the last year. I think it was the last year. And he kind of became, he was kind of thrust into that position. Mm-hmm. He played with Winnipeg towards the end of his career, and I believe at the beginning of his career, right? There's Pittsburgh in there somewhere. He won a Norris Trophy, actually, in Pittsburgh, right?
He did, yes.
But Randy Carlisle deserves this extension, and as far as I'm concerned, the job he's done there, I mean, they're limited in what they have. I mean, you look at how some of the defensemen, especially Cam Fowler, did. He has a huge part of that. Yep. And you know, Bobby Ryan has, you know, there was a little contract squabbling earlier, but he had a good year. Big fan of Bobby Ryan. And, you know, Timu, they go back to when they played together in Winnipeg.
That's right.
And, I mean, he puts his players in a position. He knows how to use them. He puts them in a position to succeed. So I think it's great for Carlisle. I think he's one of the more underrated coaches in the NHL. He might not be necessarily considered one of the most strategically smart, like now you're seeing so much praise for guys like Guy Boucher and Babcock. Carlisle is a very good coach, and he knows hockey. And like we said, he had a really good NHL career, and he was a very successful defenseman. He knows what he's doing out there.
Yeah, he's going to be one of the longest tenures coaches in the NHL, along with, I think, Mike Babcock, Barry Trotz, and Lindy Ruff. And, you know, it's good to have that consistency among the teams. I mean, the Thrashers/Jets now, they're going on their third coach in 3 years. And
exactly right. Yeah. I talk about that on site a couple times. I wrote an article this week about how the Jets can improve by reducing their shots because they've had so many shots against. But systems, coaches preach systems, and coaches generally don't change their systems. And if you have three coaches in 3 years, the coaches have got to the point where they're very confident they have, and they like their systems, and they come in with their own, you know, preconceived notions, for better or worse, in terms of what works. And as you said, Remus, and if you have players who have played under the same system, for Ryan Getzlaff and Perry, you've only known Randy Carlisle's system. Zach Bogosian has played for three different coaches, is going to be happy for three different coaches, if he signs here, for 3 years.
And it's funny, though, Remus mentions Lindy Ruff and Barry Trotz and Mike Babcock, all of those teams are successful. A coach doesn't stick on a team that is perpetually not doing well. So it's quite possible that, you know, Randy Carlisle will still be coaching when one of these other guys like Trotz or Ruff finally is let go. So it's good for him. And, you know, we should mention, too, that he was a Moose coach after Jean Perron, right? So, and he was successful there. So it's good on him.
Nobody had the smoking skills of Jean Perron. It was 1 million. That's the music, so we're up against the break, of course. We have Jim Fox of the Los Angeles Kings, color commentator for the Kings on Fox Sports West, or Prime Sports as it's now called. We're going to talk about Mike Richards. We're going to talk about Drew Doughty. We're going to talk about everything L.A. after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.